Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler, and welcome to this morning's edition of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, where we bring you conversations with talented high school students of Fairfield and Westchester and Putnam counties. These are kids that are studying independently in one of the STEM areas of science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. And this morning, I'm delighted to introduce you to Moses Zhang of Byram Hills High School. Hi, Moses. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure, and congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Moses, what was the title of your project? What were you trying to do?
Okay, so the title of my project is Detrending Systematic Artifacts of Eclipsing Binaries, specifically in terms of just of certain stars that revolve around each other. So what this is exactly is I'm trying to find the motion of the binary stars. And binary stars are just two stars that revolve around one center of gravity called the barycenter. The Kepler project, which launched in 2008, was a spacecraft that allowed us to find out a lot about these stars and just gave us a whole abundance of this data.
However, all right, so let me ask you this. I'm going to slow you down a little bit, Moses, because it's an exciting project.
Yeah.
But I just want to get the elementary part of it.
Sure thing.
So this is astronomy.
It is astronomy.
This is looking up at the stars.
Mm-hmm.
First question, why astronomy? Of all the different kinds of science, why are you interested in astronomy?
Why astronomy? It's a good question. Well, ever since I was young, I liked looking up at the stars because I think that it answers some of the most fundamental questions that we as humans have, right? Like, you know, the cavemen looked at the stars and they were like, they tried to figure things out, and it really defines our position in the known universe. And I think just the fact that, you know, we can understand more about that is something amazing.
It's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
I always think if I looked at the stars a lot, and I spent my life looking up at the stars, that I would get lost in the insignificance of me as compared to the universe.
Exactly. We were just so small.
Right?
Like, yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable. All right. And so tell us a little bit about the Kepler project. What is that?
Okay. So the Kepler spacecraft something that launched in 2008.
Who launched it?
NASA did.
So it's American?
Yeah.
And where was it launched and what was it intended to do?
So, yeah, good question. It was launched for the purpose of detecting planets. However, in detecting planets, and it captures light in order to do so, it's also captured a lot of stars. So it orbits
and stars
around
are not planets.
Stars are not planets, yes.
What are planets versus stars?
Okay, so a planet is just a smaller celestial body that orbits around stars.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And the star, if I think of the star as the sun, I think of it as a celestial body that has so much gas that it emanates heat and light.
Right, yeah.
Are all stars that?
Well, certain stars, right? Stars can be made of a lot of components. We have ones of gas, ones of rock, right?
Can you have a star of rock?
I believe so, yeah.
Because I thought they all have to have light coming from them. That's what I'm asking.
Oh, right. Okay, so.
But I'm probably wrong.
Okay, so, yeah. Looking at stars, right, they actually do give off light. And sorry, yeah, you can't. The surface of the star really defines how much light it gives off, right? So, yeah, of course, if you take the sun as an example, through processes, you know, we are able to see light that, you know, comes from the sun and whatnot. Yeah, so.
So the Kepler project launched in 2008. Was it supposed to just go off into infinity? Like, I mean, the Kepler spacecraft, it's never coming back, obviously, right?
Right. Unfortunately, a few months ago, I want to say 5 months, it was decommissioned, but it's been
around. What does that mean, decommissioned? We lost track of it? It went so far out?
So on the spacecraft, there are two things called reaction wheels. And reaction wheels basically spin around and around to generate this centripetal force to keep the spacecraft in sort of balance.
Okay.
And if one of the wheels kind of breaks, then we aren't able to train these wheels, so we can't focus on specific objects.
So it just goes out someplace else.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the second reaction wheel broke, so we were unable to.
Okay. But it lasted a long time.
A long time, yeah. 10 years.
And And now it's off to some space junk somewhere in space, just not on a particular trajectory. Can we get any data from it at all?
I'm not quite sure whether it was just, you know, let go, or because for some spacecrafts, when they are decommissioned, they're actually programmed to just tunnel into the Earth's atmosphere, and the heat from it just makes it burn up because of the speed and the heat.
I didn't think we could. I thought it was so far out that we couldn't get it back.
Yeah. We can't get it back, like, intact, but, you know, we can choose to either burn it up or let it go, I think.
Okay. So, all right. So now we know a little bit about Kepler, and that was a spacecraft. And you wanted to look at these systematic artifacts.
Right.
What are systematic artifacts?
Okay. So any time that the Kepler spacecraft messes up through itself. So, for example, it doesn't train on a certain object as well, and it overshoots the target. Or, for example, while it is shifting fields of view, while it is looking at one spot of space to another, it accidentally overshoots it and it undershoots it. That's when you get differences in light that aren't exactly from the source itself. It's not from the stars, but instead it's from the spacecraft, which is why we call them, you know, systematic or mechanical errors.
So the light is bending in a funky way?
Yeah. Think of it as, you know, if you have a long exposure, if you take a picture, right, for 5 seconds, and there's a light going across your camera, once you take that 5-second picture, you won't see one light. You'll see a streak of light. So that's the problem there.
Okay. So we're chatting with Moses Zhang of Byram Hills High School. I'm Lisa Wexler. You're listening to the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. So you realize that there was some data coming back from the Kepler spacecraft that wasn't completely accurate, and you wanted to figure out a way to test it to make it more accurate? Explain.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was it, exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's to build an algorithm so we can better look at, you know, the pattern of light that they give off. And from there, we can, you know, understand so much more about the star.
Okay. How would anybody be able to teach you how to write an algorithm? And what do you mean, Moses, by an algorithm?
Okay, so an algorithm is any, you know, computer code that is written. And my mentor didn't really say, just write an algorithm. He presented me originally with a fundamental question. And that is, hey, currently the Kepler spacecraft is not able to perfectly capture these light curves. And only assuming that we know what time light curves are at certain places, go ahead and figure out how you can find the shape of the light curves, the shape of the movements of the stars. So he posed me this question over the summer, and through meetings, I was able to slowly, step-by-step, figure out a technique. And after I figured out that technique with a bit of help, I was able to program that into code. And it's kind of weird in astronomy because there's the idea, right? There's the theory behind it, and there's the implementation. So there's still a gap there, but I was able to do both.
So you wrote code to tell a computer to do what?
Okay, so we start with a light curve, which is just the raw data that NASA sends back.
Okay.
And once we get that raw data, we can map it. So the x-axis is time. The y-axis is light.
Okay.
So when we look at light over a period of time, we can see many patterns that the stars reveal.
All right.
So
in their own orbits? Or what do you mean by patterns? Where they're going? Or what are we asking?
Okay. So in terms of patterns, I just mean, so my focus was on binary stars. And binary stars are just two stars that revolve around one center of gravity. So from the observer, if you're sitting, you know, right, if you're sitting here,
yeah,
and then you look at two stars that are revolving right in front of you.
Okay.
As these stars pass each other.
Yes.
There is an increase and decrease of light. When you can see both stars, that's where the most light is.
Okay.
But when one covers the other.
Like an eclipse.
Yes, exactly. Eclipsing binary. That's right. When there is less light.
Okay.
And overall, you can see a trend in the increasing and decreasing of light as they revolve around the center of gravity.
So is your algorithm designed to basically help scientists understand where stars travel to?
Well, not exactly where stars travel to, but kind of the speed of their movement, the position of their movement, and how bright they are.
And why is that important for scientists?
Yeah, sure. So there are a few reasons. First, by looking at the movement of two individual stars and looking at how they behave in conjunction to each other, we can understand the movement of stars themselves, right? How stars behave. Secondly, by looking at the position and where we find these stars, we can also know why are these stars, like, what are these stars doing here right now, which allows us to ask the further question, where did these stars come from? How long ago were they formed? Which, you know, goes back to the fundamental, all the fundamental.
Do we know theories. That at this point, Moses? Do we know anything really about when stars were created in the universe?
Yeah, we're trying our best. But looking at movement, right? Stars move closer to each other over time, or sometimes they move further to each further from each other over time. We are able to make these inferences on how old, you know, the universe is, how old the pairs of stars are.
Are these stars in our universe?
So,
or our galaxy, if you will?
Yeah, all these stars are in the Milky Way system. And because while Kepler looks at, you know, a very small field of view, it can see a lot of stars, but they are all like within the parameters. Yeah.
It's very exciting. We're chatting with our astronomer today, Moses Zeng of Byram Hills High School. I'm Lisa Wexler. You're listening to the Accorda Scientific Excellence Program. This is a program with a unique prize, and the prize is the opportunity for high school students to speak on the radio about their independent science research. You can find out more about it by going on Accorda.com, ACORDA.com. I believe for this season, which is the 2018-19 season, we have passed the deadline for new applications, but we do encourage you to apply in the fall. The application is free, and we do encourage you to apply if you know anybody who's a high school student conducting independent STEM research in our area. We'll be right back with more in a conversation with Moses Zeng. We'll talk about astronomy and algorithms. Stay tuned.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they started grade 6 going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the FOCUS program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
And welcome back. I'm Lisa Wexler, and we are discussing the award-winning project of Moses Zeng, who is this week's Accorda Scientific Excellence Award winner from Byram Hills High School. Hi, Moses. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
And Moses, you did a fabulous mathematics astronomy project in order to try and help out NASA, frankly. You were trying to, I guess, figure out a way to take the data coming from NASA and make better sense of it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you were finished with this, well, let me ask you this. Did you work on this alone or did you have a mentor?
Well, yes, I had a mentor. I worked with Dr. Andre Persa of Villanova University.
How did you find your mentor?
I sent a lot of emails, honestly, going, you know, door by door to each mentor, and I got a lot of closed doors, but, you know, Dr. Persa was very kind to keep it open, and I was able to research that way.
And he's at Villanova, you're here. Were you ever in the presence of each other to do the work?
Yeah, actually. So over the summer, we were able to work together, and I woke up around 4 o'clock in the morning so that I could catch a 6-hour train to Pennsylvania, to Philadelphia, so I can attend his meeting. And there we would talk about ideas with his research team, and yeah.
And did you do most of the research in Philly, or did you then come back home and do it?
I did actually most of the research in my bedroom. Yeah, usually
with a computer.
With my computer, usually with the Interstellar soundtrack in the background.
Oh, yeah? Playing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And who taught you how, you know, when I hear about people writing algorithms and writing computer code, where did you get the foundational basis to be able to do this?
Okay, so over the winter, like the winter before I did my research, Dr. Persa said, here is a college statistics textbook. You have 2 months. Learn it.
No way.
Yeah. So, and he was like, okay, that's not where the fun ends. The fun, you also have to learn the basics, the fundamentals of coding. So also on the side, just teach yourself some basic Python. So for the next 2-3 months, that's all I did, you know?
How do you teach that to yourself? I can't learn anything unless someone is explaining it to me.
It's not the most fun thing. It's not the least painful thing, but it's very rewarding thing. Ultimately.
Statistics is one of the hardest classes in college.
Yeah, I mean it's math, and you kind of apply it in certain ways. It's not just like, you know, pure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But so you learned statistics, then you learned coding.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were learning, was it a back and forth between you and either your teacher or your mentor? How did you know you were getting it right?
So I started from square one, you know, just learned the basic commands, and then I started writing, you know, small programs, and after a lot of confusion and smashing my keyboard, I was able to come up with, you know, like just a bit of things that I can operate and then I can use. And through that, I was, you know, able to develop the algorithm.
It's pretty fantastic. Yeah. And is anybody in your family interested in this? Your mom or your dad? Are they scientists like this?
Not at all, actually. My mother is a piano teacher and my father is a pastor at a church. So
that's cool.
Yeah. It's very detached.
You have a nice gift of public speaking, Moses.
Oh,
I bet you get that from your dad.
Maybe. From the pulpit.
Do you listen to him on Sundays?
No, actually, there's he speaks in Chinese, so.
Oh, you speak Mandarin too?
I do, yeah. But I don't attend his, like, service and, you know.
Right. You're not forced, in other words, at this point?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Are you a junior or a senior?
I'm a senior at Byram Hills.
You're a senior at Byram Hills,
yeah.
So we are in May. Does that mean you know where you're going to be going in the fall?
Yeah, I'm going to attend the University of Michigan.
Congratulations. That's such a wonderful school.
Thank you.
People have such huge enthusiasm for that school.
Yeah,
is that like a Big Ten or something like that?
Yeah, I don't follow sports that much, but I know it's up there.
That's short-lived. I think when you get there, you'll end up following sports.
Yeah, the Big House.
I think so. I think that's what it's about. We're chatting with Moses Zeng, and we're from Byram Hills High School, and we're talking about a scientific research problem or a project that combined computers, statistics, and astronomy. And you created a novel algorithm for, and these are your words, detrending systematic artifacts in Kepler light curves of eclipsing binary stars. That is such a big mouthful. But the bottom line is you wrote a computer program through which data could be entered.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side.
Yeah.
Of the data, it would give information.
Yes.
And how is that information going to be helpful to NASA?
Yeah, a wonderful question. We can do a lot with this information. Again, we can know the placements of stars. We can
know where they are in the universe as compared to where other things are. Like how do we begin to map the universe, right? It's in relation to other objects.
Right, right. So there are some programs that like really allow us to do this. So the most similar to my field is the Phoebe program, and that stands for Physics of Eclipsing Binaries. And that was also written, that was written in part by my mentor, and it models.
Wow.
So when you plug in this data, which is now a bit better to interpret, it models the stars, the movements of the stars. So we can understand that a bit better. There was someone in my research group who was attempting to, who did actually model certain parts of the universe to, you know, every single star and every single planet.
Wow.
Yeah. Takes a lot of math.
That's amazing, though.
Yeah.
And when you were doing this, I mean, it sounds like you accumulated a tremendous amount of knowledge. When you look back on it, what are you most proud of in terms of doing this project?
What am I most proud of?
Yeah.
Hmm.
What do you think you accomplished most of this?
I would say, you know, putting in that last letter of code or that last number of code is incredibly satisfying, but I guess another
thing work.
Yeah, to see something work, and it didn't work for so many times. I would say I'm most proud of when I was invited to attend the AAS, so American Astronomy Society conference in January in Seattle, Washington, and really present my work to actual scientists in the
How
field.
Exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been so cool.
It was a life-changing experience, really.
Really?
Yeah. So we would see people walking around, you know, with, you know, the Harvard Smithsonian, like, badges, and you could just see, like, groups of men in, like, suits, men and women in suits, and they were just like, you know, these are the big shots of
these are the big shots.
Yeah.
These are the people who will get hired by NASA, or maybe it'll be Richard Branford or Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
What do you think, Moses? We're chatting with Moses Tsang at Byram Hills High School. What do you think about all the attempts to privatize space exploration?
Wow. Okay. Bit out of my field, but I think that currently we lack, and I'm sure this is a very, you know, controversial topic. We lack a lot of funding for scientific programs. So NASA can only output so much information. They can only hire so many people, right? So while there are arguments that say privatizing space programs makes it less available to more people, I believe it's the opposite. It makes more, it does a significant more amount of research, a significant more amount of just, you know, spacecraft building and just engineering. And it allows us to look into these things, which is why, you know, I along with a lot of people welcome SpaceX with open arms. You know, these are very hopeful companies.
Do you think that as it is right now, from what you can discern, that the information that they're learning along the way is being shared, or is it being hoarded proprietary wise for these companies?
Right, right. So yeah, with
it's a good question,
private.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. With the word private comes, right? You know, who gets the information.
Yeah.
But I know that looking at the trends of the general astronomy community, we can infer that a lot of the discoveries made by astronomers are open source. They're
open source.
Able for anyone to look at.
If they're smart enough to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Unlike, you know, certain fields in biology, certain fields in nanotechnology, where we have to, you know, paywall these things because these are very important for, you know, hospitals and whatnot. Astronomers are very open on sharing their work and building this community, mostly because there's not, you know, competition.
There aren't that many people.
Yeah,
really,
yeah, exactly.
Who are that bright, who really understand it.
Mm.
Are you going to stick with astronomy in college, Moses?
Well, that's the big question.
Ah.
I'm still trying to, you know, figure things out. I may go to astronomy, which...
It's physics, right?
Yeah, it would be physics. Or I could go into the humanities. I think I'm going to take my requisite courses first and decide sophomore year and see where...
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, but some people really know what they want to do, even at your age.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think it's good to keep it open.
Yeah.
I really do. But it's obviously you're very good in math.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're very, very good at math. You can't do this kind of a thing unless you're very good at math. So we asked a we always ask an ethics question every year, and we try and change it up.
Oh, sure.
And this year we asked an ethics question, and the question was, I don't know if you recall, but we asked you to imagine that you were a salesperson for a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And the actually, we didn't say pharmaceuticals, although in my own mind I was thinking pharmaceuticals. But it said, assume you were employed as a salesperson selling a product to the general public. Mm-hmm. The product meets all legal requirements for manufacturing and has been deemed safe to use. Mm-hmm. However, it has some flaws. Are you ethically obliged to reveal your product's flaws to a prospective customer? What do you say?
There have been literature in the past of, you know, companies not disclosing their flaws and just the damages being tremendous, right? And I think this really is a question of sooner or later. Because if you don't disclose your flaws, people will. The information all over the internet, we know that these brands, right, are out there. So I think it's better to just be upfront about it and not, you know, wait for people to pick it out in the, you know.
Even if you are somebody whose bottom line might be affected because, you know, people are always, not always, but many times people are afraid to reveal flaws because they think they won't make a sale.
Right, right. But arguably, if we didn't, you know, admit these flaws and it came out, it would be terrible public image, and I doubt the sales would do too well then, right?
So as a practical, pragmatic thing, you think it's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
We've really enjoyed our conversation today with you,
Thanks
Moses.
So much
Thank you so
me.
Much. You've been listening to Moses Zhang, and he is this week's winner from Byram Hills High School, which has an outstanding – you guys have had outstanding applications this year, by the way. You got a great class.
I know.
Obviously, some great teachers. And you, I'm Lisa Wexler. You've been listening to the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. If you missed part of today's show, you can hear it on lisawexler.com. If you'd like to listen to prior shows, they're all listed and categorized at lisawexler.com. And to find out more about this award, you can go on Accorda.com. That's ACORDA.com. My thanks to Accorda Therapeutics, which is our lead sponsor for this award. And congratulations to you, Moses, once again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.